B-Pod Studios.
Today on Talkin' Rock with Meltdown.
Former Vixen frontwoman Janet Gardner's got her sophomore record out called Your Place in the Sun with a lot of help from her husband, Justin James. I had to ask her if working with her husband strengthened their relationship.
It's been amazing, actually, and it has strengthened our bond significantly.
She also filled me in on how she decided to leave Vixen this past January.
So I did the typical sit down, write out the pros and cons, really think about, you know, what's best for everyone involved, including them.
We talk about the current batch of awesome female rockers, whether she felt competition back in the day with Lita Ford and others. We talk about Motley Crue's The Dirt. Oh, by the way, would she ever write a book?
I don't think I would be comfortable doing that because you'd have to expose things about people that I wouldn't be comfortable doing.
There's lots of stuff we'll get into today with Janet Gardner on the Talkin' Rock with Meltdown podcast.
This is Talkin' Rock. Talkin' Rock. Your backstage pass to some of your favorite rock artists. Here's your host, Meltdown.
Hey, thanks so much for checking out the Talkin' Rock with Meltdown podcast. Had a couple of big ones recently with Roy Mayorga from Stone Sour. Now going to be taking over the drumming duties for the band Hell Yeah in the remembrance of his friend Vinnie Paul. That was last week, as well as Slash from Guns N' Roses. If you get a chance, dropping the scoop on us right here on this very podcast that the guys from Guns N' Roses have been working on new music. So the world's been waiting to hear about that. So it's pretty cool that Slash did that last couple episodes right here on the Talkin' Rock with Meltdown podcast. Hey, up for today, we're going to talk with Al Beck coming up here in a few minutes as he's got rock news you can use or not. Judas Priest, you might have heard about this. Rob Halford getting a little feisty on stage at a recent concert. We'll tell you about that. Speaking of Slash and Guns N' Roses, we'll talk a little Guns N' Roses news. Got some news as far as Paul Stanley and Kiss is concerned. And Sebastian Bach maybe doing something different for the upcoming fall tour. An entirety of an album. We'll talk about that as well. In the meantime, Janet Gardner's my guest today, Your Place in the Sun. Like I said in the intro, is her solo sophomore effort. And pretty good stuff from Janet. Always great to talk with. And she was scheduled to call at noon, right on time, just like she always is. Very prompt. Janet Gardner called up, and it was great to talk to her once again. Hope you guys enjoy this conversation. Janet talks a lot about a lot of things. The topics are many. And without further ado, let's get right into it. Janet Gardner today on the Talkin' Rock with Meltdown podcast. Is this Planet Janet?
It is indeed. Yeah. Is this Meltdown?
Yes. How are you? What's going on?
I'm good. Album's out. We're really excited. Getting ready to go on the road. All good.
All right. There you go. Well, we'll get this going here so you can get on with life. So first of all, yeah, like you were just saying, the record, Your Place in the Sun, is out right now. Just dropped last week. So tell us about it.
Well, we went in the studio in our house. We just really tried to up our game. We did a lot of research, Justin mostly, you know, on making our recording a little cleaner, a little more powerful. We spent a lot of more time on the drum sounds, the bass sounds, everything. So, you know, we think it sounds better, but you never know until other people hear it. But we're getting great feedback, so that's great. And, you know, we just wanted to write some songs from our heart, play some good old rock and roll. And so far, so good.
Now, you talk about research and stuff and the sound. Did you not like the way that your first record sounded?
Well, we did, but we knew we could do better. Always do better.
Yeah.
You could always improve. You know, I listened to it. And I think our new stuff sounds better, but I don't go, yuck. It's just a little bit cleaner. It's a little bit hard to explain. Fuller, but cleaner. So we're really happy that, you know, we made that extra effort instead of just kind of throwing things down and going, good enough.
Now, is it one of those things where, like, you wake up in the middle of the night and you, like, you know, you hit Justin and you're like, hey, I got an idea for that song?
Absolutely. And the poor guy is brutalized because I'm usually the one doing that. But he does it to me, too. But, yeah, it's great that anytime we think of something and are inspired, we can go put it down before it goes away, because that's how inspiration works. It comes and then it kind of goes if you don't start developing it. So over the years, there's been so many wasted ideas where you're like falling asleep and you're thinking of something really great. You hear it in your head and you got no way to get it onto some sort of recording. This makes it so that you don't lose it. Mm-hmm. You can get up anytime and get it done.
Yeah, that's so cool that you got a recording studio in your house, because I do as well with like Pro Tools and whatnot. And stuff. You could go down in, you know, in your bathrobe or whatever and just, cut some work out and get some stuff done and, you know, stuff like that. So I'm sure that you had a lot of those experiences working on this record probably, huh?
Yeah. See, you know, You can relate. Yeah, it's totally my pajamas and fuzzy slippers. I really don't know if I got like dressed up or something and went down there. I don't know what would happen. I would probably be stuck, creatively stuck.
Yeah,
I can't do it. I don't have my fuzzy slippers on.
I've never done the fuzzy slippers thing going downstairs, but but I have walked downstairs after working on something all night and listened to it over and said, you know, I'm just not digging this. Did you feel the same thing with something you might have done?
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
You know, when you're inspired, of course you're thinking, oh, this is great. And then, you know, you sleep on it or put it away for a couple of days and come back and listen. And it's like, no, it doesn't have the magic that I thought I did. So you move on. That does happen a lot.
Was there any songs on the new record that came together really quickly and ones that just were a struggle?
Yeah, always. I'm trying to think. Flamethrower, the last song on the album,
right,
came together really quick. It's just a straight ahead driving rock and roll song. Nothing fancy. We didn't want it to be. Get in your car, turn it up loud. It's just bass guitars and drums and vocals. Boom. That came together super fast.
Yeah, I would imagine a song named Flamethrower should come together fast, right?
Yeah. It's, doesn't have a lot of emotional depth, to see it that way. But, you know, there's plenty of other stuff on the album that does. So, yeah, and those you labor over a little bit more, ones that, you know, have a little deeper meaning, certainly lyrically.
Mm.
You know, I like to try to dig things pretty deep.
Now, you've probably heard a question like this, or perhaps maybe phrased differently or whatever, but how does working with your husband like strengthen your relationship and your bond?
It's been amazing, actually, and it has strengthened our bond significantly. Because, you know, it's a very personal thing. It's a very intimate thing when you're writing a song. You have to trust the person. You know, you have to know that you're both in the same place, that you're just trying to get to the meat of the song. And in doing that, it definitely, you know, brings us closer in many ways. Because we have developed a great trust, and you got to check your ego. Hmm. And being able to do that together, I think, carries over into our personal life too, of like, hey, you know, I got a little bruised ego here, you hurt my feelings, whatever. and you get past it quickly because you're honest with each other, and that's really important. I think that's a huge thing that has helped us, you know, come together, is just being honest. You know, not every idea is great. It's just not. I don't care who you are. And being able to just, you know, trust that the other person's not trying to hurt you or knock you or diss you, you know, we're both like on the same page. Great.
Yeah, I can imagine you in your fuzzy slippers, your bathrobe with your arms on your hips, your hands on your hips saying, but I was in Vixen.
That's right. Who you think you're talking to here? Don't you know who I think I am?
That's so funny. So the record's out right now. You talk about the tour and stuff. I know you got a few tour dates. Do you guys have a full tour itinerary ready to go?
Well, yeah, we only have a few dates so far in July and August. We have a lot of other things on a personal level going on this summer also.
Right.
But we're really looking to fill up the schedule in the fall. We got a new agent, so he's working on that now. So hopefully, yeah, we have a little West Coast run planned for July. We have Denver, a few things in the Midwest. We'll definitely hit the East Coast since we live here. We'll probably be in your area at some point, Detroit.
Yeah,
and
Detroit.
And then in the fall, hopefully we'll get more of a little more organized, steady tour.
Now, where is your husband from?
He's originally from the Chicago area.
Okay. All right. I tried Googling them, and there were some other Justin James musicians and producers and stuff that come up, and one of them was from Windsor, but I didn't think it was him, so.
Right, right. There's a Canadian singer-songwriter, Justin James.
Right, yeah. Yeah, that was a different. Actually, there was like three of them that came up, so I wasn't sure. What, they didn't. I think two of them didn't have pictures, so I wasn't sure who it was. So, but
right.
I saw on Googling and stuff that on your Wikipedia page, and I normally don't like go Wikipedia nuts, but I saw that your birthday is on March 17th, which is so cool. I'm on March 10th, so we're like that one step closer to being like best friends now.
That's right.
Right.
We're only a week apart. That's got to be, you know, a tight bond immediately.
Yeah, and my wife was born the same year you were born. I think she's a month younger than you. So.
Oh, you're going for a younger one, are you? Okay, I see how it goes.
So, anyways, but yeah. So we just talked about Vixen and stuff, and you left a Vixen. I guess was it officially in January?
Yes. Yeah, I think middle of January I made that announcement.
Now was this something you were kind of building up to?
Yes, of course. You know, it took me a long time to actually make that decision because it's a big one. Mm-hmm. So I did the typical sit down, write out the pros and cons, really think about, you know, what's best for everyone involved, including them. And 6 months later, I definitely think it was the right thing to do. Everybody seems happy, making music, doing their thing. So, yeah, all good.
So you literally sat down and wrote down the pros and cons, like, for real?
I did.
Really?
For real. Yeah. Oh, yeah. It definitely helps to write things down and visualize it. And all big decisions in my life that I've made, I've done that. And I really think it's helped.
Mm-hmm. Did you have a long list?
I realized that. Oh, yeah. Really long list of both pros and cons. A lot of great, great stuff. And what a way to go out. You know, last summer we played huge festivals
right.
in Europe. We played Grass Pop. We played Numi Rock. We played Sweden Rock. What a way to go out. It was awesome.
Yeah, that's cool. I mean, it's got to be a big decision to make to leave something like that after all these years.
Yeah, I mean, obviously we've gone through periods where it's been inactive,
right.
And you develop other things in your life that are important to you, family commitments and things like that. And band dynamics change like crazy. Different alliances, two people are on this page and somebody feels a different way. It's a constantly evolving relationship. So it's a miracle that any bands keep any kind of consistent membership over the years. It's really hard to do.
Yeah, I've never been in a band. It's like, it's just me. I'm the only guy here in the studio. It's like, I only have myself to depend on. But it's like, yeah, I never thought about that. It's like, yeah, there could be a couple guys against you or a couple guys with you. Yeah, I never even thought about that in a band before.
Sure. You know, two people are buddied up about something and you're not feeling the same way. And then, you know, then another two people will be feeling the same way about something. So you develop a bond there and it's constantly evolving. So, yeah, I got to the point where I kind of felt a little bit on the outside. And that's not a very comfortable feeling when you're trying to be creative and let things flow.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, most of it was my personal stuff and family commitments. And like I said, the life that I have built outside of Vixen is a high priority to me.
Yeah.
But there were other things, too, that just sort of led to the whole thing. But it's funny, too, because people are like choosing sides on a fight that doesn't exist.
Yeah.
You know,
you're talking about the fans.
What?
You're talking about the fans?
Fans, yeah.
Oh, yeah,
they're, like, arguing about, you know, they're choosing up sides. And it's like, well, there's no fight. We're not fighting. You know, I didn't try to steal the name. I didn't, you know, walk away and try to... I walked away with nothing, gave them my blessing to carry on, and that's what we're doing. So it's just kind of funny to me. People are like, well, I, for one, am not going to support your solo stuff. I'm staying loyal to Vixen. It's like, well, okay, but why? you can support both sides. I don't think anybody's going to be mad at you if you like both what both sides are doing. Anyway, that's funny to me.
That might have been a pretty big decision, like you were talking about, especially with the success you guys had last year, playing all those big shows and stuff, huh?
Yeah. I mean, that to be able to do that all these years later was amazing. So amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. Now it's like it seems like, you know, what kind of comes around goes around, because I was on the radio in the 90s and stuff when everything kind of changed the landscape. And then it all came back again, you know, and now you got cruises and you got festivals and all sorts of stuff where, you know, the 80s bands and stuff can play. There's cruises for 90s bands, metals bands, all sorts of genres in there. And it's like no matter what genre you're in, you could always find some sort of niche or somewhere to play.
Yeah. And somewhere to see a whole bunch of great bands at once. Festivals and those cruises are just awesome because of that. You know, you can kind of, rather than going and seeing bands every weekend until you see 10 great bands, you can go on one cruise or go to one festival and see it all at once.
Yeah, you've done the Monsters of Rock cruise, right?
Yeah, yeah, I did about four of them.
Four, yeah, I know. I thought that you did, yeah. You know, Harlan, the host of Monsters of Rock, they do their show out of here, out of Detroit, WRIF, and it's like he's always trying to beg me to get on those cruises, too, but it's just a weird time of the year that I can't. But those are fun cruises, eh?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's really, really great. You should definitely take the time. You got to experience at least one of them.
Yeah. Hey, you know, speaking of going back to the 80s and stuff, so did you watch The Dirt?
Yeah, I did.
So,
my son beat me to it. He watched it before I did.
Now, how old's your son?
16.
Okay, so yeah, so I have a 16-year-old as well. So they don't understand what was going on back in the 80s and whatnot. So what did he think of it?
He thought it was great. It definitely, I mean, he was kind of a fan of Motley Crue before that. But it made him even a bigger fan. Uh-huh. I was cringing outside. I heard it coming out of his bedroom. I was cringing. I was like, oh, no.
So, look, we all lived through it, you know, and stuff like that. So what were your thoughts watching it, you know, having lived through that era and all that stuff?
Well, it definitely brought back a lot of memories. It definitely... The one thing I was disappointed about was some of the really intense things that they went through were kind of glossed over a little bit.
I thought so as well. You're talking about like maybe like the car crash and the death of Vince's daughter and that kind of stuff?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Nikki, you know, he died.
Right.
I just, you know, they kept it a little light and fluffy, which I guess was good. They wanted to kind of show that, you know, it was kind of a fun time, but I thought that it could have been a little more moving in some of those parts. I mean, I felt sad, but it kind of came and went a little quickly.
I am totally 100% with you. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, Bohemian Rhapsody, I kind of got emotionally involved in that one a little bit more.
Right.
Freddie with his issues and, you know, his issues with his family, and they didn't accept him for years and years and years. He had to live with that and all those kinds of things. I like that. That makes me feel things. And The Dirt, it was fun. It was good, but it wasn't overly moving to me. And I thought it could have been because they did go through some serious stuff.
Yeah, I'm totally 100% with you. I think one of my listeners nailed it best, and they said it was like a Hallmark movie with the swearing.
Right.
It's like I'm totally with you, because I thought, man, I'm going to see the scene where, you know, Vince's daughter dies. It's really going to break me up. And I'm like, yeah, it kind of came and went. And you're like, okay, now we're just moving on. And it's like, yeah, I totally agree. So you're watching that. You lived, you knew those guys. You knew a lot of the bands in there and stuff. Was there anything in there that jarred memories from like where you were actually there? Or you heard about it or anything like that?
Well, yeah, I remember hearing about, you know, the car accident and all of those things. But, yeah, I wasn't really closely involved with their scene so much. You know, we never really toured with them. I didn't know them that well until later. I kind of have gotten to know Vince because we've played a lot of shows with him.
Mm-hmm.
But it brought back some sort of basic feelings and memories from that time, for sure.
Hey, let me ask you about some current stuff here. I know that I was thinking about this on the way into work today. I think that now I'm playing more bands fronted by female singers than maybe I ever have in my career. What do you think about the current the current crop of female led bands and different artists like that?
Well, I'm blown away. I think it's absolutely cool, and there's some really creative, interesting women out there fronting bands. I think it's amazing. You know, and just really talented ones. Lizzie Hale is amazing. Maria Brink, I love her. I think she's really got like an interesting artistic sort of thing about her. They're all great. Taylor Momsen, she's awesome. And I always say this too, that any of those women could have been huge pop stars.
Mm-hmm.
You know, bigger than they are as rock stars. But they all choose to front rock bands, and I think it's awesome.
Yeah, there's some really going on. So you mentioned like Lizzie and stuff, and I know she's gone out there on tour with Lita Ford and that. Back in the 80s and stuff, this might be a stupid question, but was there ever sort of any competition between like, you know, your band and like Lita or anything like that?
I don't really think so. I've always felt like we all support each other most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there was some little snippet in Lita's book that wasn't very kind to us. But every time I've seen her in person or spoken to her, she's always been really, really nice and supportive and friendly. And, you know, hey, what are you guys doing? And she's always been really nice. And I know that most female artists that I've ever met, there's definitely been a kinship feeling right away. A certain, you know, relating to what we're trying to do.
Mm.
So, yeah, I mean, I've never felt competitive. I've always been rooting for all female musicians, artists, singers, writers, whatever.
Yeah, I'm kind of like I'm the guy that's like, you know, I don't care female, male, black, white, whatever. If it's good, it's good. And you just listen to it and stuff like that. And I'm sure after a while, you know, you guys had to front that female band. You probably answered billions of questions about the femaleticity of it, I suppose, right?
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's difficult on so many levels. And I'm sure you've heard this a million times that, you know, you get judged a little bit differently than if it's you're just a bunch of dudes.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just kind of the nature of it. You just have to do everything you can to overcome it, to get people to listen with their ears, not their eyes. And, you know, what are you getting out of this? Does this move you emotionally? And if it does, who cares? Who cares if it's a guy, girl, halfway in between? Shouldn't matter.
Yeah, by the way, I just think I just made up a word, female tisty. I think that's, I don't know if that's even a word, but yeah, I know exactly what you're saying. It's like I talked to like Nita Strauss not that long ago, and of course, the guitar player for Alice Cooper's band, and right or wrong or whatever the case is, she feels like she has to work harder to like win over a crowd or something like that.
Well, you know what? She's a perfect example of somebody who, she's obviously really, really good looking.
Mm-hmm.
But she doesn't care about that. She wants to be known for her talent and her musicianship, and she's determined to make that happen. I really admire her. You can tell that she does work harder. She does work harder than the guys, because that's, you kind of feel like you have to.
Mm-hmm.
But she's a great example of somebody who's doing it.
Yeah, I just saw her.
She is a great musician regardless.
Yeah, I just saw her a couple weeks ago, and she is so good. And when she plays with Alice and stuff, you know, she fits right in up there on that stage, and she really can shred, so.
Yeah, she just rocks.
Yeah, no doubt. Hey, speaking of books here, we're closing in on a couple final things here for you. Speaking of books, have you ever written a book?
No.
What do you think?
That's funny. People ask me that. I think that... I don't think I would be comfortable doing that because you would have to expose things about people that I wouldn't be comfortable doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I wouldn't like it if they did that to me. So, you know what I mean? Certain things just don't need to be everybody's business.
Yeah, I have a friend of mine who works in NASCAR, and he's like, hey, dude, someone approached me about writing a book. I'm like, well, are you willing to throw people under the bus? Because in order for your book to be interesting, you got to make some waves.
Exactly. And I don't really think that's for me to be doing that. So that probably won't happen.
You got to admit, people are probably super interested about what happened back in the day with Vixen and, of course, throughout your life.
Oh, well, see, that's another problem is the reality is it's probably not nearly as interesting as people thought that it was. I suppose I could make some stuff up.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, we were pretty serious about what we were doing. So we worked hard, like you were saying, Nita feels the need to do that. That's what we were doing. So, yeah, we had our moments, like everybody else, of decadence and things like that. But for the most part, we were pretty serious about the music and the show.
I'll tell you what, the new record's out, Your Place in the Sun with Justin James. Janet, it's always nice to talk to you and touch base. And when you come through Detroit Rock City, I got to hook up with you this time because I think last time you were playing in their side of town, and I think I had something going on that night. But I definitely want to see you in person and say hello, and thank you for your time. And congratulations on the new record and much success here in the future.
Thank you, Meltdown. It's been a pleasure. Always nice to talk to you.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
And there she is, Janet Gardner, right here on the Talkin' Rock with Meltdown podcast. And, she's pretty cool. I have to go see her. I'm trying to remember the last time I saw Vixen. If I've ever seen Vixen in concert, I have to go way back in the memory bank. I think maybe sometime in the late 80s, I might have seen him open up for somebody. So, but like she was saying, good for those guys. They had a good run last year as they got back together, played some festival dates, and those are always kick-ass. So, good for her new records out. Go grab that. And thanks so much for listening to the interview with her. Now, it's time to take a turn for the worse, as we usually do here on the Talkin' Rock and Meltdown
podcast.
That's
my cue.
That's right. That's right. It's time for Al Beck with the music news you can use or not.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you what, speaking of live in concert, Judas Priest, you know, this is interesting. I just actually saw the video because you're like, hey, have you seen that? I'm like, no, but I read about it. I hadn't seen it yet. But so what happened?
So Rob Halford up there playing a show, and there's a guy right there in the front row filming the thing, and he boots his iPhone just right into the crowd.
Yeah.
And right out of his hand.
Now, right away, what strikes me is that Rob is a super nice guy.
Right.
Like, he is one of the nicest guys. Yeah. So this guy must have really been annoying him in order for him to kick that. And he really kicked the snot out of that thing.
Oh, yeah.
And those shoes that Rob wears are no joke.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So, I mean, it does sound like in the comments and stuff that's posted under that video, it sounds like maybe the guy had, like, the flash, like, the light on his phone.
That could be, yeah.
And so Rob's up there trying to perform, and this guy's got a light in his face that's, you know, not a stage light. Let's get the hell out of here.
Yeah, right, exactly.
But, you know, how do you, what's your thought on that? Because, I mean, like, sometimes people.
Yeah, that's totally annoying.
Yeah.
I mean, you see it all the time. No flash photography, you know? And well, I say that because, you know, I met Carl Palmer back, in October or something, and he was just signing stuff for people, and the management said, yeah, I can get a picture when it's all over with. Did I tell you about this story?
Mm.
And so anyways, you know, look, I'm a 50-year-old guy with a cell phone. I don't adjust things. I don't put anything on there, right? So this all took place in the matter of about 10 seconds. So after Carl gets done signing the stuff, he comes over, the manager, I give him my phone, and the flash is off, right?
Yeah.
And he took two pictures. The first one, the flash was off, but I think he held the thing too long and it turned the flash automatically on. So, of course, they just gave me my phone back and stormed off like I had just ruined his career.
Jeez.
So, and apparently there was an announcement made before the show, which I never saw before. If you meet Carl afterwards, no flash photography.
Yeah.
You know, I get that. But it's like, I don't set my phone up to take flash photography, so I don't know what happened with that.
Oh, that's even different. That was like a meet and greet type of situation. Like you were
not necessarily.
It wasn't like this, you know, it's a performance going on.
For sure, but they did kind of go out of their way to get me this picture. Yes. So, but yeah, if there's a guy in the front row, for sure.
Because I just saw, a couple weeks ago, I went and saw Jim Jefferies, the comedian.
Yeah.
And he's got a strict no filming, no photos during the show.
Right.
And he will stop what he's talking about if he catches someone filming. He'll say, put it down.
Did he stop that night?
He did a couple times.
Yeah.
There were two or three different people trying to film him. And their thing is even different from music. Comedians go, dude, like, people don't want to hear the same jokes when they come around on tour again.
Right.
So when you film it and post it, you're burning their material.
Yeah, you're ruining it for everybody.
Yeah,
that's right.
You know,
I'm totally with them, too. And it's like, you know what? Please, people, just, you know, take a break on the phones.
Right.
I'm totally with you.
And then, of course, you know, I'm in front of you, and you got to watch the show now through my phone because I'm filming it, you know?
Right. Yeah, so. I know. I mean, look, I'll take some pictures here and there and post them and whatnot. But I'm trying not to, like, watch the whole thing through my phone. It's like, how ridiculous. You're, like, ruining everything.
Yeah, I'll be honest. With this job, we're supposed to like post on social media. I'll take one, post it. Job's done. Now I can just put it in my pocket and forget about it.
Yeah, you know, I'll take some pictures here and there, especially if it's something cool. But I'm not up there taking flash photography and flash filming.
Yeah.
I mean, that's absurd.
But I will tell you, if there's a signpost that says "Do not film, do not photograph," I don't.
Yeah,
I mean, respect that.
I have two for the most part, unless it was Glenn Danzig for some stupid reason.
Yeah. Well, hopefully it's not instant karma, but Judas Priest, speaking of them, had to cancel a show in Colorado recently, and dude, all these rockers, health problems, man. Rob Halford's got some bronchitis he's dealing with.
Yeah, he'll deal with it and get back on tour. I remember one time I was interviewing KK and Glenn at the venue out here, and I'm interviewing them, and we're right in the middle of the interview, and all of a sudden Rob is in the shower room or wherever he was, I don't even know, and he starts just like screaming, like, you know, he's got these headphones on and he's singing this opera music just to prepare for the show. He didn't know we were in there recording, and his voice is so loud, it projects so much.
Mm-hmm.
And I think one of the guys, maybe Glenn or something, had to knock on, hey Rob, we're trying to do an interview. So anyways, let's talk about Guns N' Roses here. Those guys not only are doing, you know, Louder Than Life and different things, as Slash told us a couple episodes ago here on the Talking Rock podcast, you got the solo tour going to the end of August, and then the fall tour with Guns N' Roses playing those big festival dates. And then, of course, going to go and record their brand new record, which he kind of gave us the scoop on.
Yep.
But also, they just announced another cool festival.
Yeah, they're doing the festival circuit, man. They are now going to be headlining the Voodoo Music and Arts Experience, which takes place October 25th through the 27th at the New Orleans City Park.
Yeah, it's weird, you know, being up here in Detroit when you hear about those outdoor festivals taking place at the end of October. What are we doing here? We're going trick-or-treating with our kids with snowmobile suits.
Right.
So, yeah, they can do that down there. So, anyways, yeah, good for those guys. I'll tell you what, man, this Guns N' Roses tour, I have to believe it exceeded expectations. Slash talked to me about it. He's like, yeah, you know, it used to be like, you know, cool, people would show up, but we weren't sure what was going to happen with this one.
Mm-hmm.
And look at all the thousands of people that have watched it. As a matter of fact, I think it's the second highest grossing tour. I don't know, $560 million or something, you know, since this whole thing started. So good for those guys.
Good for them, especially the whole not in this lifetime thing, man. They're doing pretty well for never wanting to do it again, you know?
Yeah.
All those years ago.
Take 20 years off, then go back and do it. So.
Never say never.
So Paul Stanley, speaking of Kiss, what's the deal with those guys?
So Paul Stanley does say that they have a plan for the final concert. Obviously, they are out doing the final tour right now. They've got a venue. New plan. They've got all sorts of plans for the show. However, they cannot announce it yet. So we know they've kind of got the end game, you know, set. We just don't know what it is or where exactly yet.
Well, I'm not going to drop the, I'm not going to, you know, leak the cat out of the bag here, but I do have from pretty good source where it's going to be, but I can't say it. So,
all right. Well, so Meltdown's on the end, and I'm the news guy with no information.
And no follow up questions, please.
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah, that's going to be, it's going to be pretty cool. And we'll see if it's even their last show. This last show could take place in 2027. We don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah,
who knows?
I do know kind of where it's going to be, at least as to where they're saying now, but when it's going to happen,
Right.
Nobody knows.
Yeah. When you do a final tour, it's oftentimes multiple years.
Well, look at Slayer. Yeah. Yeah,
exactly. They did a couple of years, and I think they did actually announce their final show for their tour. So they'll be done. But yeah, that's how those wrap-up tours always go. They go for really long years, and then they do it again in 10 years.
Yeah, right.
when they come out of retirement.
Well, speaking of bands that should get back together but won't, and maybe not in this lifetime, would be the guys from Skid Row. Of course, those strangers to open it up for Guns N' Roses back in the day. And let's face the facts. I mean, Sebastian Bach plays, clubs and outdoor, what do they call them? Like, fairs and different things during the summer. The guys from Skid Row without Sebastian Bach are playing clubs and outdoor fairs. They could be playing theaters if they put their forces together. But whatever happened between those guys, and I'm not 100% sure, and I'm not going to pretend to know, but I've talked with Sebastian Bach before this on this very podcast. It's like, what's the deal? He's like, I called, text messages, blah, blah, blah. They don't return them. And, whatever the case is. But I guess the debut record is going to be celebrating its 30th anniversary coming up.
Yeah, the Skid Row debut album celebrates 30 years. And I don't know what the rest of the guys are going to do, but Sebastian Bach's got some plans to celebrate. He's going to be going out on tour starting late in August. He's got dates announced through November. Through October, the first couple of days in November, too. He's going to be performing the debut album in its entirety on this tour.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, it's funny you should bring this up because I just talked to Rob DeLuca just yesterday. That's his touring bass player. And Rob called me from Germany. He's over there with UFO, who he also plays for.
Yeah.
And his original band, Spread Eagles, put out a record on August 9th. And their new song is out called, it's out right now called Speed of Sound. Not to veer too far away from the Skid Row thing, but Spread Eagle, their first record back in the early 1990s, is one of my favorites of the entire 90s. This was a band that was hungry and desperate and really like living in the, I'm not going to say in the ghetto, but these guys were like down and dirty road dogs and rock dogs. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
Wow.
And that first record has such a feel to it that it's just like one of my favorites. They're from New York City. And that record just has this New York City grimy feel to it. They put out their second record. And although I liked it, it just kind of didn't have that same kind of, I don't know, it's the same kind of desperation.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like they had toured and maybe lived a little bit more pampered of a life.
Right, yeah.
But it's still good.
Yeah.
But the first record's really hard to top. So
that's a bold statement saying it's one of your favorite records from a decade.
It
we're
is.
Talking about Nirvana, Soundgarden, Ricky Martin.
Yeah. Well, the Ricky Martin one's like third.
Yeah, right.
No, but that one and a Lynch Mob from the early 1990s were two of my favorites, right there. And if I ever get a copy of that Spread Eagle on vinyl, man, you'll never see that again. But Rob DeLuca out there on tour with Sebastian, and he's a great bass player, really good guy. And so, yeah, like I said, Ray West and Rob DeLuca, the two original members from Spread Eagle. And Speed of Sound is out there right now on a video, so if you get a chance, go check that out. But anyway, so that's what we got. You ready?
Yeah, I'm good. Albeck Radio, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram if you want to reach out.
All right, at Meltdown WRIF. I do appreciate you guys listening. Of course, you can call the feedback line as well, 248-586-2988. And don't forget to follow the show on Twitter at Talking Rock with One. Thanks so much for checking it out. We'll do it all over again real soon.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.